Substantial.
Hello, hello.
I feel like that was do you remember Hello Moto? Hello Moto.
Hello Moto. What was that?
It was some sort of Motorola phone.
Oh yes, Hello Moto. Was it a little snappy one?
Yes, the Motorola Razr. Yeah. I was always desperate to have one of those. My friend had a pink one, and I really wanted it.
Oh, nice. I kind of miss. I used to quite like a little Oyster Snap.
Yes.
Oh, that was something quite cool.
I sometimes quite like a little flip phone. Mm-hmm. Think about it from time to time. Mm-hmm. It's very satisfying when you're on the phone and then you just close it when you finish the phone call.
It's got a satisfying snap, hasn't
it? Yeah, it does, yeah. And then when it rings, you're like, oh, yeah, open it up. Oh, sorry, hello. And it's like very like busybody.
Yes. And also, I actually quite miss the slider phone as well. The Nokia, whatever that was, 2310 or something, that was a slide. And it always felt sophisticated.
It does.
The slide. And it was the same thing. At the end of the call, you could just put it back in.
I mean, this will all link in actually to our conversation, I think.
Actually, it will. Yeah, oh yes, good point.
Which is kind of weird.
Good point.
It's like we plan these things, but we don't. Mm.
But I know, it's like we have a pre-recording conversation, which we actually have had today.
Yeah, we have. We've been chatting away for about an hour, to be honest.
So, anyway, Fiona, what's caught your eye this week?
This week, the past couple of weeks, I've been reading a collection of essays about Hampstead Heath Ladies Pond. So it's just called At the Pond, Swimming at the Hampstead Ladies Pond, and it's grouped into essays by season. So you start in winter, you work through spring, summer, autumn. So it's very good, and it's just basically little essays that people have written. Kind of, it's not always specifically about their personal experience of the heath. It might just be related to it, and there's maybe they interweave some of their own story into it, or interweave some sort of sociology into it. But it's just been really interesting to read. And I read one recently, and it was all about dendrochronology. Is that thing? That's when you measure, you know, trees and how you measure the age of trees.
Oh,
by the rings.
Yes.
And it was all about that. And there was this, the ladies' pond, they were, they renovated it like a couple of years ago. And they renovated like the changing rooms and they chopped down a tree. But one of the lifeguards saved the chopped down tree and asked, oh, I want to keep that. And she kept it and it had the stump. And so women would walk past and they'd be like, oh, that's how old I started when I started coming to the heath.
Oh,
this is how old
goodness.
The tree was and stuff. And they realized the tree was sort of 84 years old or something by counting the rings. And so, it was really interesting. So it was really fascinating to read. And
what was that word again?
Dendrochronology.
Dendrochronology.
Dendrochronology. I think that's what it is. Anyway.
That sounds right.
And I can't, at the moment, we're in lockdown, swimming. I can't swim anywhere, so I'm living vicariously through these essays.
Yeah, I get that.
Like, oh, swimming in the heath winter. Ooh. And they're talking about like the ice and going in and the sort of people, you know, going every week or every day and like stuff like that. So it's
so interesting. And is it closed at the moment completely?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, the ponds are all closed. So, So that's kind of sad, but it's been very enjoyable to read. And because every essay is just its own little container for a story or a thought, it's not like they don't have to link.
Yeah, that's quite good.
They're just different styles. And
it makes for quite a nice read, that, I think, when it's a little short essay.
It's just a little short thing. It's lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just very pleasant to read. And my friend sent it to me, so that was really nice of her, and so she was like, oh, I'm sure someone's already bought this for you, and I was like, I wish. So that's what I've been very much enjoying. That it's been lovely.
That sounds great. That sounds lovely.
Tremendous. And what's caught your eye this week?
Well, I watched the film Instant Family last night. I had actually watched it before, because as we may have talked about when I talked about jobs, I used to have a job where I wrote educational resources based around films.
Yes.
There's a number of films that I always associate with that, because you have to kind of troll through them quite a lot and then watch the same clip again and again and again. So I'd seen it for an assembly, but I hadn't. Yeah, it's been a while since I'd seen it. It popped up on my Netflix. And I remember at the time watching it and thinking, well, I'll come back to this in a minute. So basically the premise of Instant Family is that it's set in the States, set in Atlanta, and it's got Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne, and they are a couple mm-hmm. who decide to adopt. They decide to foster, and they end up adopting three children, one of whom's a teenager, she's 15, and then mm-hmm. there are two younger children. And it's just about their process of that. But it's a comedy, and it's kind of, I think with those actors, they're known for doing those kind of they're not really family comedies, but they're mm-hmm. you know, they're quite lightweight things. I'm thinking about things like Bridesmaids and that sort of genre of film. And I remember at the time thinking, well, I don't know how I feel about an issue like fostering and adoption being talked about. And there are some scenes in it. So there's a scene where they go to an adoption fair and you watch it and you think, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. That can't possibly happen. Where effectively they go to all these people who've been cleared for adoption can go to this sort of state fair and they're basically picking out a child if they identify somebody they might be interested in. You think, oh, that's ridiculous. Anyway, I did some reading at the time when I was writing on it and discovered that actually that is a thing in some parts of the States. That's a thing where and it's effectively the most efficient way of beginning to connect families. But you think, oh, this is a bit distasteful. Mm-hmm. Really. Mm-hmm. So, I wasn't sure of the roots of it at the time, but what I was struck by again is that it's very moving, actually, mm-hmm. and there are lots of things. I mean, and I don't have direct experience of fostering or adoption. I have a number of friends who do, though, and I think there are quite a lot of parallels with how it really is in real life. And when I read a bit more about it, the person who wrote it has also experience of adopting, and so he has put a lot of his own experiences into it. So things like, for example, when the kids arrive, they've got black bags with all their belongings in these black bags, and you know, somebody makes a comment about it, and Lizzie, the 15-year-old, says, "Well, that's how you can tell a foster child. They always mm-hmm. carry all their whole life in a black bag." And that that's something that Madlug. Do you know the company Madlug in Northern Ireland? Make rucksacks. That's their big thing. You buy a rucksack, and every time you buy a rucksack, they give a bag for a kid who's in care. And that's the whole thing, is to stop the indignity of carrying your belongings in a black bag. So there's lots of little things like that that are pretty true to life. It's also actually very funny. There's quite a lot of laugh out loud, you know, particularly kind of physical comedy, ridiculous, having to adjust each other things. And it's pretty heartfelt. And I tell you, here's my point that I was getting to with all of this. I watched it partly because yesterday was Mother's Day and we had watched some stuff at church about mm-hmm. Home for Good, which is mm-hmm. the charity that works in adoption. I thought, you know, it's a good time to watch a film about adoption. And I was struck once again by, I really like when people use a popular genre mm-hmm. to make quite a complex issue accessible to people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they've done with this. They've used that genre, the kind of Bridesmaids. So it's not really gross out comedy, but it's that kind of in-betweeny comedy. It's not particularly clever humour, but it's, you know, it's easy to watch, easy watching, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what they do with it is they then take something that's real and truthful, and they help people engage with it, and you get to a popular audience with it. And I was thinking about things like, even I always think Ian Rankin's really good at that. So the Rebus books, they are about policing in Edinburgh and a detective story, but they're kind of, he's also analysing what's happening in Scotland and societally what's happening, but he's using the crime genre to do that. And I really like that.
Yeah.
So it's getting a high mark for me, to be honest.
I'm glad.
It's not the hardest comedy to watch because, you know, it's not difficult to understand what's happening at any given point. The characters are likeable. There's a little lump in your throat at points. You identify with these kids and what they've been through. You identify with the well-meaningness. There's you know, some quite funny people also in the parental support group who are, they're sort of archetypes, really. I would say they're not nuanced characters, but there's nothing wrong with a good old archetype to make you think. So that's Instant Family on Netflix and probably available on lots of other platforms as well. Actually,
it's
universal. It's also following on from Erin Brockovich, really, because I've actually spoken to a couple of people over the weekend who've told me, people of my age, told me they've never seen Erin Brockovich.
Oh.
So I'm on a campaign to bring back the popular film.
Bring it back. Bring it back.
That is what's caught my eye. So today we're thinking about the future.
Yeah.
Well, not the future, but the idea of future.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like the future. And it's like, how do you even define that?
I know.
I'm like, I don't even know where we start. What are we doing? What will we do? What's happening? What's going to happen?
That's the question, my friend. That's the question.
It's very stressful.
Here's a starter.
Yes.
When you were a child,
yeah,
what did you think the future was going to be like? And what were you looking forward to about that?
To be honest with you, I don't really remember thinking the future will be like this or that. Like, I don't really know. I think as a child, I didn't think about what the future would look like. I think sometimes I thought about what my future would look like. I mean, that's a bit self-involved, isn't it? Like, but even then, I don't remember doing that very often. So it wasn't like, you know, when you're like, when you're younger, what did you want to be when you grew up? I didn't really think about that very much. Or like, I did sometimes wonder, I think I wondered maybe, think maybe we'll have more people living in space. Or sometimes I thought maybe, we'll have people living on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about the personal future thing until you said that there. I actually have a story from when I was 11 that I actually sometimes use when I'm speaking to young people about ambition and about.
I love that you're using your own 11-year-old words to prop up like your work now. You're like, children, be more like my 11-year-old self.
No, I use it to say, do not be like my 11-year-old self. Yeah, okay. Because I mean, it's actually hilarious. If I'd had the wit, I would have found it. It's in a P7 storybook that I've got, covered in brown paper, of course. But it's hysterical. It's all about in 10 years' time. So I write it when I'm 11, and I'm saying in 10 years' time, and I can't remember all the details, mm-hmm. but basically, I'm going to be, I think, a diplomat and a journalist. I'm going to be married with 3 children. I'm going to have a home in Edinburgh, a home in Argyll, and one in London. I mean, it's all working out pretty well for me at 49. I've, you know, ticked all those boxes. It's ridiculous.
Oh my
it's
goodness. Ridiculous. To be honest, I do appreciate your 11-year-old self's ambition, though. Like, there is something to be said there of, like, aim high.
Well, yes. But I think the point I always make is it's very self-centered, actually. Mm. I mean, let's be honest, most 11-year-olds are pretty self-centered.
Gosh, that's savage.
That's a sweeping statement, isn't it? No, but what I mean is, developmentally, you know, it is probably quite hard to think about.
Yeah, that's fair.
The future beyond yourself.
Yeah.
But when I use it to talk to young people, I talk about the fact that, you know, pretty much none of those things has happened in my life, but it doesn't mean my life's negated. You know,
so exactly. Anyway, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But other than that, I don't know. I think space travel. I thought we'd have been traveling to space a bit more.
Yeah, I think because, you know, we've already been to space. Well, I've not been personally, but like, you know, they're like, it's,
I think I thought that I could be in space though.
Oh, I don't think I ever got that far.
People would generally be in space more.
Okay.
And that's not happened yet.
Yeah, I think you thought maybe it was more of a common occurrence. Oh, yeah, like that's an option. Oh, great.
Hop off to Mars for the day. Yeah, exactly. I did tell you what I did used to worry about, though. Because I guess there's a lot of science fiction, isn't it? You base all this really on what you see. Mm-hmm. And I used to worry that we'd always have to wear shiny clothing and I would sort of miss normal clothing, which is ridiculous, isn't it?
Shiny clothing also just isn't that
flattering.
just kind of sad that you have to wear shiny clothes to fit in space. And also, why do you have to wear shiny clothes? Isn't that really sore on your body? Because does the sun not absorb it?
Or reflect it?
Oh, it deflects.
So it doesn't reflect. Yeah. I think I thought in my head that we'd be wearing shiny clothes on Earth.
What?
I mean, it'll be from some TV. It'll be from, like, Blake 7 or something. I don't know. I just kind of... that fashion would move in that direction.
That is hilarious.
And I would feel a bit silly because I, you know, quite like wearing colourful things.
Actually, now you say that, this is fashion linked. I do remember when the age of skinny jeans kicked in. I remember, this is like a future thing, I remember thinking the age of non-skinny jeans is over. It will never, we will always be on skinny jeans. The future is skinny jeans. And I remember actively thinking that in my brain as like a 12-year-old. I was like, I'm never going to wear something that's not skinny jeans ever again. Let me tell you, folks, I don't wear skinny jeans anymore. I don't own a pair of skinny jeans anymore.
No. I mean, Laura, my flatmate, said to me the other day, I feel I spend most days when I'm in these jeans looking like Monica from Friends. Or maybe it was Rachel Prince. Anyway, somebody from Friends in the 90s. Because it is. That look is back.
It's back, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole, like, oh, like, you think the future is going to be, like, the future. And that actually wasn't even just, that wasn't related to me. It was more just like, no, I was like, no one's going to make me make jeans that are not skinny anymore.
Yeah, and actually, to be honest, if you told me that the 80s would come back in, I would have guffawed in your face. Because, I mean, there were some absolute humdinger fashion things in the 80s, but some of that's back.
Like what? What's back?
I don't know. I knew you were going to ask me that and I can't remember anything now. Well, I don't know. Like, I feel like neon's a bit back.
Yeah.
But then you see, I can remember in the 80s wearing neon socks. Different colours of neon sock, yeah. Like an orange one, one leg,
oh,
and a,
wow.
Yeah, and the leg warmer and all that stuff. And I remember my mum saying to me, oh, I used to wear neon socks. And I was like, did you?
Yeah, that's not cool.
It's come back. It's come back in. I mean, she was not wrong.
Yeah.
It's funny how things come back round, isn't it?
I think that's the thing. There's no, well, sometimes I think fashion's maybe just one example of that, isn't it? Of like things coming back. Around, like, in the future, we always think the future will be a next step or a movement away from something, but sometimes it's a movement, I don't know, it's not always, it's always actually sometimes closer to what we think it will be.
Yes yes, and it's only ever one step at a time, isn't it? I think you have in your head that the future will be this massive transition to the future, but it just happens incrementally. Also, that does bring me to something that I think is actually quite interesting that I think about quite often, about whether the direction of history is progressive or regressive. So there is a school of thought that as the human race, we're just getting better and better as we get more and more advanced. Are we?
Are we, though?
Are we, though? How do we measure that?
Yeah. And do you remember we both went to that... Oh, what was it? It was some sort of like weekend of leadership development thing. And they were talking about different stages of like human development. Mm-hmm. And they talked about those colours and like the development, and that we were now entering into this new phase of like development. And that was linked to artificial intelligence. And like, but they were, I think that was their point a little bit, wasn't it? Of like, just humans have like developed, and cognitively we might have developed, but it doesn't mean it's like better.
Yes.
And I think sometimes you think, well, at least we're not living in this, you know, the Stone Age, and at least we're, you know, we're not living like that. And I'm like, well.
I know.
Sometimes I wish I lived then. Actually, no, I don't. Sometimes I wish I lived in the Tudor era, okay? That's, I've said it. That's all I needed to say.
It's out there. It's out there. Well, and also we have this arrogance that we are becoming more civilised.
Yeah.
And so, and I think that works on a cultural level. So if you go to, well, the example I always think of, I went to the Museum of Islamic Art in Qatar. That says like a total name dropping thing, but it was beautiful, beautiful museum. But also some of the kind of Arabic understanding of mathematics and art and philosophy, way, way advanced of where we were at in the West at that point. And, and I think that, you know, that's consistently true globally, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, the different eras and different parts of the world rise to prominence at different times. Mm-hmm. And we sort of always assume that we are the most advanced at the point we're at. But but I'm not sure that we always are.
No,
and then it's a question of what you're advancing in, because, you know, are you kinder? Are you, you know, and then that's what happens, isn't it, when technology overtakes the kind of moral argument about things. So I was listening to a podcast recently about artificial intelligence and just the moral arguments around some of that it's not keeping up with the science.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of slightly sleepwalk into things that we maybe should be thinking about.
Gosh.
Yeah. It's definitely getting more complex, isn't it, as we go on?
Yeah. I think that's a really good question, though. Or you're like, what are we advancing in, or what are we, what do we think the future will be like? Do we think it's progressive or regressive? And it's like, you know, are humans, compared to 100 years ago, are humans kinder? Are humans more loving? Are humans, like, probably not.
Yeah.
I wasn't there 100 years ago, but I think humans, we are quite similar. The things around us change, but do we change? I don't know. Don't know if we do.
I think individuals do.
Yeah.
I think individuals do, but yeah, no, I agree. I think I wrote a poem this week, Fiona, that
did
was, you know, I'm doing my Poems of Hope.
Of course,
and
yes.
It was based on the fact that Jen Robertson had told me a quote from Solzhenitsyn, which is basically about the line that divides the human heart. So the line that divides good from evil basically comes down the heart of everyone.
Mm.
And it was on the back of, you know, I mean, last week to me felt like a very polarizing week.
Yeah.
A lot of different things that people were being quite angry about, and we do this thing where we, you know, it's right and wrong, good and evil, black and white.
Yeah, and it's that whole thing that we talk about, don't we? We talk about looking back on history and learning from mistakes, and then it's that whole thing of black and white. So how did they not know that this was like this? And as you say, it's all of us slips. We slip into it.
Yes, and you live in the fear of being caught on the wrong side of history.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a quote. It was just when you said that, it makes me think about a quote from Kierkegaard.
Kierkegaard.
Say that again.
That's chickpea that's chickpea in Danish.
That's very good, Fiona. Very good. Did not know that. It's such a cultural podcast. So Søren Kierkegaard said, Mr. Chickpea, that's the same thing. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards.
That's
so you can't spend your whole time dwelling on the past.
No, no.
But at the same time, you can only make sense of it when you look back. I have thought about that this year quite a lot.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because people can be quite quick to try and make sense of what's happening.
No, and I just don't think there's much point in the middle of it, is there?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
And I think that's the whole, like, the pandemic, COVID, has really scuppered a lot of us in thinking about the future. Because for a lot of people, all of a sudden, for those of us that like to plan, I'm actually not a massive planner, to be honest.
No, I'm not either, actually. Uh-huh.
For people who do, it's been a very stressful experience because you can no longer plan your future.
Yeah.
You can't plan this thing will happen then, I will go here, this will happen, or there's no way you can kind of plan the future anymore. Whereas I think before COVID, you couldn't always plan every part of your future 100%, but there were things you could control more. We can't do that anymore. Everything's uncertain.
Yeah. And I, whilst it's a horrible experience, I think it's not a bad thing for you to live in the moment.
I
mean, it's the whole premise of acting, isn't it? You should be in the moment at any given point.
Yeah.
Not that acting then dictates everything else in the world, but, you know, it's the filter through which I see things.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think we've touched upon this of, like, not wishing your life away by always thinking of the future, but also not dwelling too much in the past of, like,
yes,
I will always just think about all these things that happened in my past or the past.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you need to be present in your future. You need to make your friends, have your porridge. I don't know why I said that. But I don't know why I said porridge. I've not had porridge in ages. It's not even in my brain. Why am I thinking about that? That's so weird.
It's because you're down the line to Scotland. It's immediately making you think of mine.
All they do is eat porridge up there. Oats and water, that's all pure.
Sit with your kilt on. It's like another quote. This is from Eleanor Roosevelt. And she said, the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams.
Ooh.
I don't know if I agree with that. The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. I mean, it sounds nice.
It sounds nice, but I don't know if I agree with that either.
No, I don't know if I agree with that either, actually. Yeah, it does a bit. Yeah. Yeah.
It's scary.
I don't know if I want the future to belong to me anyway.
I don't think it should to any of us.
No,
individually.
True.
Sorry, I shouldn't have been like, I don't think it should belong to you.
I think it's nice words, but I don't know if I agree with the sentiment of it, actually.
No, I mean, we could unpack that for a while. I do think that, you know, people are trying to predict, aren't they, the sort of future of, like, where power is going to be in the future and stuff like that. You know, they're like, oh, the age of such and such a country being the power of, you know, the future with being with them is coming to an end, which I think is quite interesting because I suppose you can maybe predict it a little bit. You can look at trend. I'm not an economist, so I don't understand that.
I do find that fascinating. I think I would quite like to be an economist. I don't know if I've got the mind for it, but people I know who are, I find them fascinating, the way they can talk about trends. And
yes, and they can predict trends. And
I tell you what I'd like to be, as a futurist.
Oh, isn't that not a type of future maker?
Oh, maybe. Is it?
Wait, what's a futurist?
Is it not somebody who predicts trends and, you know, kind of speaks into what it's going to be like on the kind of basic level of, you know, we'll all be wearing pink next year, or on the sort of, yes, China's in the ascendance and America's in the decline. That's your basic future. Futurism.
Futurism, I swear, is a type of like theatre from like the like absurdist theatre from like the early 1900s.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think it was anyway. And it was all chaotic. That was the whole point. Uh-huh.
Well, that's a whole interesting thing around the 20th century, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is absurdism and chaos.
Mm.
I guess a lot of that coming out of First World War.
Mm, yes, it was all around then. It was all like, we reject anything ordered, structured.
Yeah.
Where did that get us? Nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, we need just chaos is what we need.
That's very interesting.
Which is
like, because you wonder what art will be made on the back of what we're going through at the moment.
Oh yes.
Mm.
That is interesting. Think about it. I mean, oh.
I know.
I mean,
because I do think we're going into a season of volatility. You know, in terms of climate change, in terms of migration, more people migrating than any other point in history.
Yeah. I think COVID's been an interesting one because in some ways it's what we have been saying, you know, think about the present moment, can't think about the future. But the negative side of that is that people then choose to not think through things like the climate change crisis anymore.
Yes.
So they're like, well, the pandemic's the biggest thing we're facing. Yes, it is, absolutely. But beyond that, we have like an ongoing really bad relationship with the climate. And some parts of COVID have helped with that, other parts haven't. It's still ongoing. Mm-hmm. And then as you say, that things like migration, like that's a massive thing, like racism, all of these things are really big issues that exist outside of this pandemic vacuum we're in.
Yes.
That are in the future, we have to think about it. But it's not to get too doom and gloom, because you don't want to be like, the future's so dark. But you have to be like, well, we need to sort of be present, but also allow the present to shape positive futures as well.
Yes. Yes. Because that's making me think about the fact that, you know, we've said about the living in the present moment thing. And there's a bit of an argument that, you know, as human beings, that's what you should always be present. You should always just be in that moment. But we actually have the capacity to imagine.
Yes.
And the capacity to dream. So maybe that's where Eleanor Roosevelt comes into it. That as human beings, we've been given this ability to see a different way of... We've talked a lot about predicting the future, but really, I suppose there's something about shaping the future, isn't there?
Yes, I think that's what it is. That's the way you want to be. Is sort of not being like, oh, in 10 years time the future will be like this, but you're like shaping the future is about like seeing what's in front of you right now and taking that first step and trying to create a future that you'd be proud of and want to be part of, so that in 10 years time, basically shaping the future is the way to get to the future,
which
is kind of weird.
Yes.
But it's how you get there. So
you
need to make, and different people will have different versions of what they want the future to look like. Personally, I would like everything to be, I would like us to have more solar panels. I would like us to be completely green renewable energy. I just think that'd be great.
And again, and like a lot of these things, though, it's, you want to dream big, but then you can only take action in the things you can take action in.
Yes, that's true.
You know, getting behind whatever it is that...
Yeah,
which is why I guess as the human race as a body, I suppose if you put it in faith terms, talk about the body of Christ and things, it is about people identifying what they bring to the table, what they bring to the discussion.
Yeah. What do you bring to the table in discussion then?
Oh, that was a straight back at you.
Ooh.
What do I bring to the table?
How do you help shape a future?
Oh gosh, that's a good question, Fiona. I think I'm really interested in how to tell good stories to cause people to think about transcendent things, so things that are beyond the here now. I think I'm quite passionate about investing in younger people.
Mm.
I think I am pretty passionate about explaining things clearly for people. Mm. You might not think it if you listen to this podcast.
I know, people are like, she's all over the shop, really.
She thinks that's what we're gifting us.
What?
So these are things, but they're quite esoteric things. You know, I'm not great at building walls or...
Building walls.
Putting solar panels up. But I tell you, I do like a new idea. You know, I do quite warm towards positive things. Positivity.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you bring to the table?
Oh, I knew you might ask me it. But really, I know. What do I bring to the table? Actually, it's a very good question. I don't know.
It's an excellent question.
I think I bring to the table a belief and enthusiasm that every single person has something to offer.
Well, that's good.
And that, like, every person is, like, or can, could be great.
Oh, that's
if
good.
They realize
yeah.
that they just realize that. And so I think, yeah. I don't know, maybe that's not maybe a very like tangible thing though, is it? But
well, no, but I actually think it, you know, as a value, I think you're kind of living that out in what you do as a job.
Yeah. I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. And
I do think poverty of aspiration is an enormous problem that we don't think about very much.
No, it's true. And I think I just really believe that people are great, and I just don't I get really emotional about it. I'm just like I watch TV with my flatmates, and I just get excited about every single person that comes on TV pretty much. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're amazing, and they're like, oh my goodness, stop it, it's the positive about everyone. And I'm like, it's because they're just so great. And I'm like, it's only if they prove me wrong will I change that opinion.
And don't lose that, I would say.
I know. I don't have anything practical to offer.
No, that's what I feel. You know, if they sent me on a mission to Mars.
Don't send me on a mission to Mars.
I don't know if I would. I mean, what would I be able to do? Tell a few jokes?
To be fair, that's quite good for morale.
Keep people's spirits up.
That's probably what I could do.
Be generally all round encouraging.
If something was going wrong, I'd be like, guys, that's great. You're doing a really good job of fixing the problem. Oh, that's well done. Meanwhile, like, no, I'm doing nothing practical to help with, like, us losing all our oxygen.
Yeah, but if you got to Mars, you could probably grow vegetables from poo. You know, like in the Martian.
What poo? Our poo?
Yeah. That's how he stays alive. Is it the Martians? Is that what the film's called with Matt Damon? Oh, he's like, oh,
it's absolutely no idea what you're talking about. Absolutely no idea.
Okay, so the basic premise of the film is that Matt Damon, I think, is stuck on Mars.
Oh, and it worst takes nightmare.
Years to get to Mars. I mean, it made me think about how far away Mars is from Earth, actually.
Oh, God.
But he, there's something to do with his, I can't remember if his spaceship's broken to come back, so I'm losing the detail. But he has to sustain himself by growing food on Mars, and he has to use his own poo as a fertilizer.
That's fit. And there's nothing else to use, I suppose.
What else to do? But you would be pretty good on that, I think.
Is that because I poo a lot, or is that just because I think
it's a great you like gardens? You've got a knowledge of gardening, is what I was thinking.
Oh,
you poo a lot.
I was like, I don't know what you're saying.
I think the conclusion we're reaching is the future's going to happen, and we will be still talking about poo in it.
Oh, poo will always be part of the future.
It's future.
It's always going to be in our future, isn't it?
I tell you what I would like to happen in the future.
What?
I'd like a hollow and substantial life.
I knew you'd get it in there somehow. I knew it. I knew it.
Do you think it'll happen in 2021?
No.
Oh, don't say that.
Sorry. Oh, maybe.
2022?
We don't know. We can't predict the future. We don't know.
Yeah, I know.
One day, even if no one's actually listened to our podcast, by the time we do it, we will just meet up and do a pretend live show.
Oh, yeah, we could just do that, just pretend.
Yeah.
Except then you might alienate people because they'll think, oh, I wanted to be at that. And we could put false crowd noises on it, you know.
It'd be like radio drama.
Well, and apparently like the rugby, I only learned that yesterday.
Yes, they did that, yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought, because I actually said in our family call, I felt a bit stupid afterwards. I said, do you know, considering there's not that many people in the stadium, it actually sounded quite loud. And my mum and my dad, my mum, he's not even a sports fan. My mum, my dad, and my brother were all like, well, they put noise on it. I didn't know that. I didn't know.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Well, this has been an enlightening conversation.
It has actually. It's taken quite the.
We've
arms
been
and
actually
legs,
all over the shop.
Oh, totally.
I can't really tell you what we've talked about. Other than poo on Mars. So, Substantial, do you have a sign of hope for us this week?
Well, I thought I would talk about something that feels a bit personal and doesn't sound very hopeful.
Okay.
So, bear with me on this. But I found over the course of this weekend, quite a number of times, on quite trivial moments, I found myself getting a bit emotional.
Oh, yeah.
So I talked earlier about Instant Family. I cried a good 3 or 4 times during that. I cried at the rugby. I cried at something I was reading in I don't know if it was in the newspaper or something. But there were quite a few moments when I just had a little emotional response to something, which I thought was quite an interesting thing because I've not been crying very much. Background to this is I used to be a complete crier, you know,
like, really
cry at the, cry at the Yellow Pages advert and all that kind of stuff. I just find things moving, you know, things move me, and for quite a while I've not been particularly emotional, and there's a whole story with some of that, but particularly in the last year I've slightly sometimes wondered if I'm becoming a bit hard as I get older. But yeah, I was sort of encouraged to feel a wee bit more in touch with my emotions this weekend, and I was wondering whether as a society that's going to be an important sign of hope, actually, that when we begin to reconnect a wee bit with how we're feeling and articulate that and potentially release some of that, then that's actually a really positive sign of lament and loss and moving on. I'm not saying that any of my emotion was necessarily connected to any of that, because as I say, it was just triggered by you know, kind of fictional things and so on, but yeah, I just thought that was interesting. I'm not sure how much of a sign of hope it is, but I think it's an encouragement to people that it's good to acknowledge and feel your emotion.
Yeah.
Because actually that is a hopeful sign that you are acknowledging and processing your emotions.
I think so. I think there's something there, isn't there, of like letting yourself cry, not suppressing that potential response. Mm-hmm. Is a very doesn't feel very hopeful at the time, but it's a very hopeful of engaging with emotion.
I think that's really true. And the other thing that prompted actually was that yesterday afternoon I sat down to read a psalm from the Bible, and I got as far as the first verse of it, which was I memorized it. I love the Lord because He heard my voice. And that set me off. I was like, flipping out, what's going on here?
Gosh,
but I think that there's something in that about being heard. And I mean, you know, in terms of where we're at societally and, you know, people not being heard or feeling the voice has not been heard or trying to get themselves heard. Mm-hmm. It's important that we hear each other, I think.
Yeah.
And also acknowledge our need to be heard.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow, that felt a bit super serious.
Oh, well, it was very intense, but lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
Loved it. That's delicious. Thanks.
That's good. And have you got any wisdom for the week?
I do. So I was quite evangelistic about this before we started, actually. It's basically just don't, when you get mail in, you know, if you get post and sometimes you get random bits of post that aren't actually addressed to you, they're just sort of the household or like, they look a bit like spam. Don't throw those pieces away straight away. Always open them and have a quick skim to check. Maybe not even quick skim, a bit of a thorough skim sometimes to check that they, you know, what it is. So don't throw your post away without looking at what it is, because basically I'm in England now and the upcoming census is taking place in England and Wales. And as part of that, every household gets sent a letter with a code on it that links to your, like, you have to fill out the census online. The census, you have to do it as part of like being a citizen. You'll get fined £1,000 if you don't do it. So I've just become quite passionate about the census, just because I think there's lots of people that are going to miss out, potentially not realize they have to do it because they just threw the piece of paper away. And it's not been super well publicized, to be honest. Like, no. I live here and I'm like, what?
And it's once every 10 years, isn't it?
It's once every 10 years, and it's important because it does actually help. It helps government figure out where to put funding for different things, depending on like different stats and data for places. So it's really important, but I've become extremely passionate about it over the past 5 days.
Well, the thought of £1,000 fine would
absolutely
would be a bit of an incentive.
It freaks me out. I'm just like, guys, I kind of want to message around a couple of my friends, be like, have you done it? And there's a certain time frame you have to do it within.
Yeah,
they will send reminders, but they're not going to be very patient, I reckon.
Well, that's excellent wisdom, I think.
Thank you very much. So that's my wisdom for the week.
I mean, it's the same with your voting card, isn't it? You don't always actually need your voting card to vote.
No, that's
true. I'm always aware when that comes in. Sometimes it can be in amongst a pile of things and you don't really pay
just
attention.
Think, oh, banal. Mm-hmm. But anyway, do you have any wisdom for the week?
Yes, I do. This is something I've not yet done, but I'm planning to do. I'm feeling a little bit freaked at the thought of when we come out of restriction, I'll suddenly have all these different options of things to do, people to see, places to go. It's actually finding it a bit overwhelming. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to sit and I'm going to write a prioritised list, I think, of activities I would really like to do and people I would really like to see and spend time with. And I'm just going to say this now because it's public. It's not that I don't want to see some people. It's just that, we talked about this when we talked about friendships. I'm a friendly person. And so, you know, there's always an opportunity to hang out with somebody and spend time with them. But there are certain key relationships that I would like to prioritise coming out of this lockdown. Some of them people of my age, actually. So those of you who are listening, look for a call. So yeah, no, I think though, the point being, I kind of want to do this before we're out of restriction so that I've made my decision about how I'm spending my time.
That's good.
And I think I'm also going back to, you remember what did you call it? Self-care night.
Yes.
I think I would also, before we suddenly rush into being busy again, like to just strategize a wee bit about how I'm going to spend each week.
That sounds very good.
You can come back to me and ask me if I've actually done it.
I will. I'll come back to you.
As a non, not so much of a future planner.
I know, that's it.
But when you come back, it will not be next week because this is the last episode.
Last episode of this season.
Yes. Woo-hoo. It's been fun.
It has been fun. I've enjoyed our conversations.
Yeah, I think it's been quite a nice mixture of
I've had quite a lot of topic. Chuckles this season.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know if the listener has too, but I've just...
No, I think they have been. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the admin episode from that point.
Oh, gosh, the admin episode. It just was my unravelling, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. I think that's what I liked about it.
Shut
up. In a good way, just in a kind of... It was just sort of like
you could hear in my voice the gradual deterioration and breakdown of my understanding of my own life.
Very much so. Excellent.
Good. It would be good for listeners to let us know what they enjoyed from this season. Any highlights. Yes. We love hearing what listeners have to say. So
And actually that has been a highlight for me this season is I feel we've had more interaction with people.
We've had quite a lot of
telling
us
where you're listening things.
Yeah, where you're listening. And so we'd
and
still love
that.
To know that. We'd love to know what you enjoyed. Just send us a little message or you can contact us via our website.
Yes, you can, which is now up and running and live and lovely.
Yes, so we have a little, you know, form you can fill out and we'll get in touch with you. So let us know.
So very good. And then we can look forward to the live show.
Indeed.
But for now, this has been
Hollow
and Substantial.
Thank you very much for listening.
Now here's a question. If you go to any planet, what planet would you go to?
Well, because most of them are made up of dust.
I'm sorry, what?
A lot of them are not very solid. So you don't want to go to one that's not solid.
Wait, sorry, what?
I'm pretty sure like some of them are just like sort of collections of rock. So they're not actually very solid. Have you not heard this before?
No, I'm speechless.
Really? You look so speechless. It's like a thing.
So which of your major planets?
I think Jupiter and Saturn aren't very solid from what I remember or from like when I was 9 and we learned about space at primary school.
Now, here's the thing. That is the problem, you see. You learn about space when you're at primary school and then, so if you're a bit older, like me.
Is that a date?
It's out of date.
Yeah, because Pluto when I was at school was still a planet.
And they changed the number of planets in the solar system. That freaked me out when that happened. There used to be nine. I don't think there's nine anymore.
No, they got rid of Pluto, but then they put another one in, but then they took that one out. So I don't know if Pluto is still part of the Sitch.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
It's messing with my brain.
It's a mess.
I'm sorry I've asked the question, actually.
I know. I'm sorry I answered the question by making you more confused.
I can't believe that. So that, this is not the time. I mean,
no,
we've used
we'll
up 40 minutes already. It's not the moment for this discussion, but I think we'll revisit.
Let's talk about maybe, space one time.
Let's do space. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, cool. Literally didn't know that.
Did you not?
No.
I might be making it up. No, I'm not. I don't think I am.
I know. I mean, you're probably right because your space knowledge will be more recent than mine.
Hmm. They're not solid is all I know.
Wow.
They're like gas and rock.
Yeah. All just spinning around.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Pretty sure. And it's about the size of them.
Okay.
Rather than what they're made up of. Well, maybe, I don't know how they measure.
I'm still speechless. I actually have to go and look at some sort of astronomy
program. Just go on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Or an encyclopedia for space.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a thing. It will be.
That probably is a thing. Yeah.